It's the show Agent Orange / Adolf Twitler would love to shut down.
So here's the story, folks. I am the least black person that you've ever seen in your entire life. In fact, we did very well relative to racist people.
It's the no bullshit zone.
It's called fake news.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
I know who you are. Just wait.
On the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network, where today we'll talk about aioli not being a sauce. You'll find out about that in just a sec. We'll also talk about Mueller, his testimony in the week in review, Trump taking a victory lap, and then everybody else figuring out what the hell is going on in the world. And that's exactly what we're going to help you do today. Who's we? First, me. I'm the host of this little shindig. My name is Shaggy Jenkins. You can find me at my website, shaggyjenkins.com, or wherever fine social media is perused by Russians for data ahead of the 2020 election at Shaggy Live. Joining me from the city of Chicago is a very proud papa educator of radio babies, because not only is he knowledge-based, but now he's spreading that knowledge around. Please welcome educator, radio host, and all-around genius broadcaster, Chris Bass.
A little over both shoulders. Oh, it's me. Okay. You have overcome, for I am here. That's too much of a... The genius part threw me off. I'm like, he doesn't know me very well, does he? But I'll take it. You're very kind. How you doing, Shaggy?
I'm doing pretty good. But, you know, I would say that anybody that heard us talking ahead of the recording of the show, they would clearly say, you know what? Chris is the level-headed one. Shaggy needs to be committed.
Well, I'm not too far behind. I'm right behind you with my own monogram straitjacket. So there you go.
Man, be big pimping up in that psych ward. Hey, look, we got to start with a crazy story this week. It has to do with the one thing that Arnie Arneson says I don't talk about enough, Hawaii. Yay. This week, Chris, we had a movement all about putting a telescope at the top of one of our tallest peaked mountains. However, that's got the natives screaming aole TMT, which, in case you're wondering, is not a sauce made from Teenage Mutant Turtle.
No, it's not.
No. But aole is the Hawaiian word for no, and TMT means 30-meter telescope. Now, I know that you guys on the mainland kind of live in a vacuum when it comes to these kind of stories. So, Chris, as much as we talk about racial disparity on this show, would you believe that this week a minority governor got in front of his state and basically called the most, marginalized indigenous minority here in our state terrorists? Did you guys see that?
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that, and it just gave me chills, because we can't have language like that.
This is the thing, though. Most of the time when we talk about Hawaii, people say, oh, it's a deep blue state. So, of course, you guys are living in some sort of liberal paradise on maglev trains with rainbows every day and health care for all. To which we say, have you visited Hawaii ever? It's like $9 for milk here. But moving on. One of the things that a lot of people have brought up this week is that the governor seems to be talking a lot about Hawaiian people protesting the development of the TMT on top of Mauna Kea without actually talking to the Hawaiian group. Now, yesterday, we had a moment where the governor actually went to the Mauna. However, when he was there, he didn't really want to make a lot of official comment on camera. Chris, I hate to ask you, but is Hawaii right now getting the old okey-doke from our governor?
I would probably say so. You know, again, when a certain rhetoric or language is becoming universal across the board, even all the way to where you are in Hawaii, you know, communication is key. And I think that at times you have to be very careful what you say and how you speak, especially nowadays when people are, I think certain people are trying to find a voice of reason, an understanding, so there's this commonality amongst us all. And when you don't find it, I think you kind of get, you know, lost in the shuffle, and you feel you put to the side.
You know, and this is the thing. The Hawaiian nation has felt put from the side since 1893, when, in fact, we were annexed under false pretenses. This is actually still going on in United Nations courts. The actual, was the Hawaiian nation illegally disposed by the United States? Now, with all of these kind of arguments and the climate this week that we're going through with the Mueller testimony, is it any surprise that once again, in our country, we have two sides, both with very dissimilar goals and objectives, dealing with the same subject, not talking to each other?
Well, that's been a quote-unquote way of having another art of conversation. So when you say certain buzzwords or certain things to get the party started, so to speak, or get people's ear to be a part of the conversation, what is actually being said? Is there meat to the story? Is there meat to the conversation between both sides of the aisle? Or is it just lip service? And it's up to us to decipher which one is which. I think a lot of us get to a point where we're getting tired of being fed lies. We're being tired of being lied to. And so that's where fact-checking comes in, when it comes to politicians in particular. And we get tired. We want some semblance of the truth. We get the whole truth? Of course not. But we get some semblance of what the truth really is.
You know, and the thing is that because they're both in the news, let's go ahead and transfer from the state of Hawaii, which, once again, if you do not know what's going on in the 50th state, for God's sakes, don't come here as a tourist and then tell us how to fix it. Instead, take some time to read up on the TMT, Mauna Kea, and especially, as of lately, Governor David Ige's actions. But David Ige, Chris, this week, shares the spotlight with a very unusual national character, in the guise of one Robert Mueller. Both of them went in front of the concerned groups and basically said, I won't talk about it unless it's on paper. Problem, only this week, one of them was the one that did the paperwork. Ige won't say anything, says, well, we'll keep it on paper. When you go to look at the paper, well, you can't see any of those papers. But Robert Mueller testified this week. And here's the thing, Chris, even though he did exactly what he said he was going to do May 29th. He did not give any testimony outside of his written report. Was Mueller there to play around in Washington and not give answers?
No, I think Mueller pretty much played close to the vest. This is how I saw it back in May 29th. He pretty much said it was up to Congress to make the decision when it comes to the president and all his nefarious behavior patterns. So with him being an impartial reporter and investigator during all this time, former special counsel Mueller was leaving it up to Congress to say, it's up to you. Look at it, not the redacted version of 448-page testimony and investigation. It's up to you whether you're going to make the move or not to go after President Trump.
You know, and this is the thing that I've always wanted to do with you, because I am, by nature, a wimp. So I'm not really a big sports guy. But when it comes to the actions that happen in some of these House hearings, I almost feel like we need to go down by the X's and O's, especially in a day where there was as many hard hits, especially from the outside, as there were today. Would we say that when it comes to what's happening this week, what's happening today, what's happening in general with the House is a full contact sport?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the gloves are off. You know, it was contact. You have to protect yourself. You have to knuckle up and guard your grill. Either you play offense or defense or both. And when you look at that perspective, you know, who gets hit, or does somebody score a punch, or does somebody score a bucket, or does somebody make a home run? So those sports analogy, I think, pretty much work because, again, we're trying to find which side is actually doing something to give us, again, the information that we need as the public.
Yeah, because here's the thing. When it comes to information going out to the public did not, America, I'm going to wag my finger at you and be like, shame. America, by and large, did not read the content of Mueller's report. However, during his testifying at two different hearings, Mueller did very little other than that. Chris, I'm going to ask you before we get into the X's and O's here, as far as Mueller himself, a lot of people are going to try to paint this was a victory for the Dems, or this was a defeat of the Dems, this was a victory for the GOP, or this was a defeat of the GOP. Knowing everything we know about his character, especially over the years in his public service, and his behavior today towards both sides of the political spectrum. Does Bob Mueller, in fact, actually play favorites, and did he result in a clear win for one of the sides?
I didn't see it as a clear win on either side. It's, again, what you take away from it. You know, Special Counsel Robert Mueller's been doing this for years. He's been in front of numerous committees, so he's very seasoned. You notice some of the exchanges he had, you know, with the committee people, one-word answers, very concise, you know, trying to control the flow of the conversation. And he's used to that, so he knows, you know, how to comport himself in front of these committees. Again, the information is disseminating. It's what the person is listening to or watching. Now, to you, depending on what side of the aisle you come from, it could be a clear-cut victory or it could be a defeat. So, again, because you're pro your own and you're anti the other aisle, of course, you're going to say it was a victory on our side. Our side, other people didn't do anything at all. Again, it goes back to the public of what they decide. And they're split, too. I'm somewhere in the middle. I've always been somewhere in the middle because I don't really care for either party, to be honest with you. But this is what we have in the two political parties that we have. Again, the message, when you get out of it, once again, Bob Mueller, experience. He knows these type of things. Again, playing close to the vest on how he operates. So once you see how he is able to do the lobby back and forth between him and the people of the committee, it was almost like poetry for me because he didn't hardly miss a beat. That goes back to experience. But as far as information was concerned, it depends on who you are on the side of the aisle and what you take away from it.
This is the thing that really got me, too, because for the longest time, I have, through the course of this show, been steadily getting what I would like to call bone-shattering depression at the state of our democracy.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
That's tough. But I've not really been a fan of either side of the political aisle as of late. Both of them are making very costly and very damaging mistakes when it comes to American democracy. The thing that I got to ask you, though, was seeing somebody like Mueller that clearly had very little patience for either side trying to politicize his report. Chris, isn't this the type of a politics, the centrist type of politics that where most of America is actually trying to see this story from?
I would say yes. Mueller strikes me as a person of character. He strikes me as a person that really wants this country to be great, not from the standpoint of a campaign slogan from our president, but from the standpoint of what makes you individually great. Your family is coming over from different countries over the years and centuries. Coming here, this country, to make it what it has become over time. Different nationalities and different people making it the melting pot of what it should be and what it used to be. But again, the rhetoric coming from both sides, Mueller strikes me as a person that, again, find the commonality, find the problem, because the problem is the president. If you come together on this, you're saving America. And you can't come out and say that, of course, if you're Robert Mueller, but I think he gives you the clues. If you look at it, if I'm for America being what it should be, and I gave you 448 pages of investigation, please disseminate and get out of it what we can do to make this president pay.
Okay, because now it is time to get into game day. Dun, 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 dun. I need the big, like, splooshy robot graphics and things here.
Right.
Why don't I have a budget? Okay, but here's the thing. Let's get into the X's and O's. And before we get to the action on the field, let's talk about which team actually pre-gamed better from what we saw in the House testimony. So, Chris, would you say that far as our two champions here, the Democrats and the Republicans, was it very easy to tell from watching the testimony? One side clearly spent a little bit more time in spring camp than the other one.
Well, you look at the Republicans, for example, their job is to deflect. Their job is to say, no, the president didn't do this. He didn't do that. How dare you say these things? That's their job. That's what they're doing and what we're seeing playing out right now. The one who also impressed me with all this six-hour-long testimony, Representative Adam Schiff, him being the chair of the House Intelligence Committee. I think when the testimony between Robert Mueller and him had the exchange, I think he put it all into perspective. I think Schiff was brilliant. I think he asked the questions, for example, about the possibility of our American democracies being challenged or being interfered from Russia. What would you do? What should be some action be towards the president? Just paraphrase what he said. And Mueller said yes. And so when you get to the meat of the whole situation, not go around John's barn, which is what they do, the heart of the matter was the fact that Schiff brought on home between the Russian interference of 2016 election. He was able to say, what do you think, Representative, you know, go back to Special Counsel Robert Mueller. And he gave distinct answers to those questions from Schiff. To me, that was the point of reference.
Yeah, because if I'm looking back at the tapes on Monday, trying to do a little bit of quarterbacking, I'm going to say that as far as team preparedness, if I'm sitting in the GOP locker room, I'm going to be like, guys, clearly we came out with a defensive-only plan, and we should have actually made this a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more offensive stuff than defensive stuff, because when it came to the Democrats, it seems like their training camp was nothing but, let's practice alternating play. We will have one player try to assault the field and gain some yards, and then we'll have another player basically just try to hold the line until the next bigger play. They had more of a mixed strategy as far as moving the ball, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, if you follow football, for example, there's a play called the Wildcat. So if you're the quarterback, you kind of fake out the defense, and the running back takes the ball and throws it to the, you know, to his player, you know, to his cohort. So again, these trick plays, you said before about everybody playing a role, that will throw people off. So I think, again, you're right in your analysis of the Republican Party, you know, saying that, you know, go out here and got to, you know, defense and stuff like that, and not really a finesse type of defense. It's mostly just hardcore stance, you know, type of thing, but not really looking at the whole dynamic of the whole field. That's a whole different play altogether.
Yeah, because what this reminds me of is like, you remember that Super Bowl where Janet Jackson showed her nipple to everybody?
Yeah. Nipplegate. I remember that, yeah. Like it was yesterday.
Yeah, it turns out that that actually was the game with the most fourth quarter turnovers in the Super Bowl history between the Carolina Panthers and the New England Patriots. The reason I bring up that particular scenario is because that seems to be what's happening between the Democrats and the Republicans, whereas the Republicans are playing the part of the Carolina Panthers, they have a strategy to stop said ball, but once they get the ball, they didn't really have a strategy for moving it back into enemy territory, versus the Democrats who, like the New England Patriots, were specifically trying to move the ball every play and not let it move backwards. That was clear difference of strategies that in the fourth quarter of Nipplegate Super Bowl actually changed the tide of the game from the Panthers to the Patriots. Now, I bring that up because it does seem, when you go back and we look at just certain plays, shall we? Just certain plays. When we look at people like a Jordan or what was the other one? A Gauss that did it. They seem to be, on the Republican side, your blocker. All they did was use their time to basically block Mueller from talking. But on the very next play, when the ball changed hands, Democrats, on following both of those cases, seemed to move the ball further and further into the territory Republicans were trying to defend. So if I'm halftime coaching this, Chris, I got to imagine that if I'm Donald Trump and I'm the president, right now, I'm not telling the team, good job, everybody. Let's go out there and finish this game because it's such a cincher.
No, I like your football analogy. What the Democrats were doing, they were moving the chains. You know, that's what they were doing. They were going and getting the yardage, going into, like you said, enemy territory and making it work. So, again, it's more methodical. So you break it down again to a sports analogy with football. Defense, you know, hardcore, you know, we'll try to read the plays and everything else, where the offense for the Democrats were more methodical, inch by inch, yard by yard, moving the chains.
Yeah. Now, when we talk about moving these chains, let's talk about the areas that they actually move their ball into, because for the longest time, Donald Trump and all the House GOP members have basically been saying no collusion, no obstruction. It has been their champ. And trust me, after being at 7-something rallies this week, I know what a chant sounds like. However, I don't think that there's a lot of weight to this chant after Mueller's testimony. Chris, is there any reason, as a president of the United States, you would come forward after that display in the House and say, hey, that basically does the rest of the exonerating that his report didn't do. Yay me. Looks like we won this game, boys.
Well, again, going back to the president, you know, he's always about self. You know, we're just living in his world. You know, he's in charge and we all peons. So from that massive ego perspective, of course he'll come after all this testimony and think it's about him, that it was a victory. It's the classic, the emperor wears new clothes. You go by that storyline as well. You know, here's a emperor who thought that, you know, he had all these great robes and the finest of, you know, yarn. It was invisible. He walks around with no clothes on and doesn't know that. So, again, the ego is an amazing thing. So going back to Trump, yeah, of course he would take the stance that it was a victory, that there's no collusion, that we have the victory lap, everything is okay. But going back to Mueller, I think Mueller did a great job of making you think. Even if you did not believe what the Mueller report was about, redacted or not, I think in just by common sense, well, if it was common, everybody would have it, but by common sense theory, you should at least question.
Yeah, and that was just it too, because this is something that I think I'm going to go ahead and say was sneaky, because while Donald Trump was taking his victory lap and he was basically telling everybody that would listen, look at this, they look like a bunch of fools, I'm the man, everything's great. But then I've noticed that over the hours that Trump made those statements Wednesday afternoon, and the hours that have transpired since then, Chris, something interesting has been happening. A lot of people are going, hey, what was that part where they said in the House testimony, time and time again, 6 different Democrats said it. They asked Mueller, could Donald Trump be indicted of a crime if indeed he was not president? And could those crimes be indicted should he leave office in the near future? I think that they were trying to kind of dog whistle Democrats and be like, hey, we might not be able to get him here with a landlocked GOP-controlled Congress, but I think we know a way that we can get him, guys. And 6 different representatives ask, can he be charged out of office? Should we look at that as kind of one of those secret gotcha moments from the Dems?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the thing about all of this, whether it's Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the like, trying to find ways to get the president in some way, put him in a bad light, not himself, put himself in a bad light, but put him in a bad light because of the fact of past dealings, being in the president's chair, he's living on borrowed time, and he knows that. Again, out of all the president's history, why won't you show your tax returns? It still doesn't make any sense. So I'll put it like this. In 2020, it's up to us, just like Mueller says up to Congress, for us to try to effect some sort of change. Now, if Trump gets in again, the 2020 election, he has 4 more years of borrowed time.
Yeah, but that's just it. With Trump not getting 4 more years, it looks like the troubles could just be coming. Because keep in mind, with all of this stuff that's happening at the House this week, you still have open investigations in the Southern District of New York at the state level. These may not getting talked about much, but a quick check and yep, they're still ongoing as of today. So, Chris, I got to ask you, because, you know, we're going to run out of time. We've got about like 60 or so seconds here, actually about 75 seconds for you to answer. Chris,
sure.
Were the Democrats basically trying to set up their strategy of, if we can't get you here, we will set it up so that people know where we can get you?
Yes, because you had to establish a timeline and track record for it to begin. So with these testimonies from Robert Mueller, what you're doing is setting aside the documentation that you need to go forward with a possible coming after him with various indictments, with various rules against whatever he was doing when it comes to business perspective and abusing his position during the time of president and then coming back after it if he's not reelected. So again, you're establishing a precedent and timeline to make sure that if we don't get you now, you're not elected in 2020, we'll get you then.
Okay, so I got to ask this. As far as everybody was concerned, is there any potential time bombs ticking right now after Mueller left the session?
I think part of it deals with the fact that you have a president who comes off very unstable. And even though the Republicans never mentioned it in public, there has to be some misgivings behind the scenes. Not all Republicans co-sign what the president is doing. So the only time bomb that would happen, as far as I'm concerned, if Republicans were, and it won't happen, but mind you, but if it was, Republicans have to, within the party, go against the president. They won't do it. That's the only way you're going to affect a time bomb to, you know, be detonated.
Yeah, because let's just face it, this week when it comes to news out of either House, the Senate, or the House of Representatives, basically there was no good to be had on either side. But I do have to say, it did make for a very interesting picture. And when we come back, I want to talk about one of the most interesting pictures taken in D.C. this week and your reaction to it. Till next segment, stay close, everybody. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
Too much consumption of the Shaggy Jenkins Show could result in a higher IQ, a better understanding of the world, and not being called a f***ing idiot as much. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show, all the way live from the very tumultuous 50th state of Hawaii. If you have no idea what's going on here, I recommend you get on Google and find out. Joining me from the very windy city of Chicago, where this week they have enjoyed similar weather to Hawaii, please welcome back the tropical Chris Bass.
Thank you much, Shaggy. It's always great to be with you, my man.
Yeah, whoever said climate change isn't real has never had a Mai Tai in downtown Chicago.
No, they haven't. This is quite tasty.
it tastes like summer and could change.
That's a dandy beverage. Yes, it is.
So this week, I thought we would try to do something very, very light, because a lot of people in the media have been trying to figure out this for a while. It's something that's not like a major story, but is a major-ish story, and is something that nobody in America has dealt with. Are we ready for the, what I would like to say is the most confusing story of the week?
Yep.
Okay, strap yourself in, kiddies. Chris, I'm going to ask a very simple question. This week, we learned that you can't really do this in an acceptable way, so, Chris, how do we call politicians racist in modern times, if they're actually racist?
Okay, well, I think the main thing is when you listen to their rhetoric, what they say, and how they say it. And you can't make it more plain than that.
You know, I think that's kind of the truth, because when we talk about things that people say, could it be things that people allow said around them that they didn't necessarily stop? Could that also be within that definition?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, just real quick, if you are a part, say, of an organization, and everybody is like-minded, they have a mission statement, they believe in it, doesn't mean that you agree with everything that happens. So say your fearless leader says something out of pocket, you don't agree with the fearless leader, but you remain quiet. You remain silent, you don't oppose the leader, you're just as guilty as what your leader said that was probably vile, disgusting, and racist. Because you're quiet, you are co-signing what your leader said.
Yeah. Now, when we talk about co-signing, this is the thing. Could leaders also co-sign if their mob says something?
Well, again, you're playing to a certain rhetoric. You're playing to a certain crowd. You're playing to your base. And so when you know your base of operations and how they think and how they elect for you and get into office, you will say anything to placate to them.
Yeah, it definitely. And here's the thing. When you're on a stage, and let's say that you're given a speech where you're attacking one of your political enemies, and now the crowd starts chanting something pretty bad. Do you stop them, or do you let them just kind of go?
Depends on who you are. We've seen what happened with Trump recently at a rally, and he just let them go. He does this thing, as we've seen before on television. He's at these rallies, and that's where he really loves it. I mean, he loves being off teleprompter Trump. He's not confined by a speech. He just goes with the flow. And having said all that, when he's off teleprompter and he says things like, you know, go back to the countries that your families came from and things like that, you hear a chant of, you know, go back, lock her up, whatever the chant is. He does this thing where he steps away from the podium kind of like this. And then, like, he accepts all the rhetoric, goes back to the podium. That's what he does. So when you see him do that one move where he steps away and he's quiet, he's like aside, comes back to the podium because he himself wants to hear the chant. He never stops the chant. He lets it go by stepping back from the podium and lets it ride.
Yeah, because when it came to that moment where the chant was happening, Donald Trump, because in his defense, he says, I'm not racist. There's not a racist bone in my body. Maybe because I'm made mostly of Jell-O and burgers. There's no racist bone in my body. Because like sharks, I'm made of cartilage. No. Just all joking aside, he says there's not a racist bone in his body. Time and time and time again. But let's analyze the optic. Because this is something that Republicans always bring up. The quote-unquote optic. Chris, if I'm on stage and my crowd starts chanting, send her back, and I push away from the mic and gaze off like I'm looking at some sort of second sun from Tatooine sunset off to the left, it does kind of look like I'm basking, not disagreeing, doesn't it?
You're in the moment. You know, you're going to take it all in because... Look, you can't get more of an ego boost than to have a podium and thousands upon people there to hear you speak. It's a great ego trip. So every moment, every applaud, every, you know, field or face in the crowd, you're going to gleam onto that. You know, as I say, he's in his element. So when you sit back and, like I said, duty aside, push away from the podium and take it all in, you're agreeing with the chants that are being said because... That's the element you want. You put it out there, it comes right back to you.
Now, this is the thing that this all brings up, because for the longest time, Donald Trump has exhibited racist behavior. He's done this since the day he took office and basically said, hey, the guy before me was totally crap, ran the country into the ground. He was crap. So from the moment that he took office, he was engaged in racist behavior. However, we've learned not too long ago that it's impossible to actually call a sitting president a racist. And they had a huge debate about this on the floor of the House, trying to figure out how exactly to call a politician a racist when they're not. So this is the thing. And I really think that this is a common sense question of the day. Chris, who is the idiot that said we can't call politicians who behave racist ways racist?
I believe it was Trump.
Oh, so this isn't one of those long-standing things that Republicans have been trying to tell us of, you know, you can't call the president racist. This has been on the books forever. It's just this one, huh?
Yeah. Again, you got to consider the source. And I understand the optics and the vision is different between both parties and, again, people who are lost in the middle. But I think, again, you have to call what it is. The man is a racist. And he has done a great job being divider in chief. not a healer in chief. I'm not someone who's trying to bring the country together, but to divide and conquer. And again, when you say things like that, that is a dog whistle for years of racist behavior. Go back to Africa. You know, go back to, you know, other countries. Don't be here. But again, if we go by that serious quote, quote unquote, of leave the country, go back, we all have to leave. Except for the Native Americans.
Yeah.
We all gotta go. Because their country was taken from them. So again, historic wise, it's always been that type of rhetoric and behavior that constantly divides us. And so was racism around before Donald Trump got into office? Of course it was. But he has been the keeper of the flame to keep the racist embers aflame.
Now, this is the thing that I really gotta ask, though, because this week he stepped up attacks once again on the four minority freshman members of the House called the Squad. And I've even brought up the point that when you do this, this is basically the signs of a weak man looking for what he thinks is an easy enemy so that he can have this great victory to brag about, even though he knows the odds are substantially on his side. But time and time again, Trump exhibits misogynistic and racist behavior. I'm so confused by the fact that the GOP keeps trying to defend him. I mean, Chris, how big of a stretch of the imagination must you be if you're in Trump's base right now to still think your president, quote, does not have a racist bone in his body?
Well, a lot of these people have to be quiet on the GOP because they're in power. Yeah, the hierarchy, the presidency, and the House, and everything else. So you don't want to disturb the rank of command and the power. So you have to be quiet. You have to nod your head. You have to go forward to the public and say, well, the president's not really racist. I expect people to fall for the okey-doke and go along with it. Yeah, you know, he's right. He's not really racist. Those people are racist, too, who go along with it. So, again, you're subscribing and talking to a mindset that talks to that person. If you are a person who is racist, and then someone comes along, has racist rhetoric and tones and behavior, you gravitate towards them, right? Because you speak the same language.
Yeah, because this is the thing. As long as we're talking about language, it's one of the things that when people look for actual proof that the president is racist, that they don't really consider, which is language and how that language is used, even not directly, to enforce racist practices. And this is something that I thought was very interesting with our next story, because the stereotype in the United States is that when it comes to public assistance programs, this would be your EBT, your SNAP, and things like that, that overwhelmingly in the United States, said services are used by, quote, illegal immigrants and minorities. Now, how long, let's just be honest here, Chris, how long have you heard that stereotype going around in your life?
Since the beginning of my time itself, since forever.
Yeah, right? I mean, like, from the second that you were born, you know that stereotype. Once again, me too. I was born in the South. That's a stereotype that is enforced the second that you are able to leave your mom's womb and in the state of North Carolina, smoke your first Marlboro. It's very weird state I grew up in. However, this is the thing. Donald Trump this week enacted a program to flush the food stamp program. And I'm going to ask you, Chris, who does he think he's hurting by doing that?
Well, he doesn't care. That's the first obvious thing about what's happening here with this program to destroy it. You talk about veterans, for example. Veterans will be hurt by this. Again, you're talking about food stamps benefiting 3.1 million people, which goes into children, veterans, seniors, work families, and the like. And not everybody can be a quote-unquote millionaire like the president or people that have money or to worry about making ends meet. There are people out there who need assistance. And so to take that away from them, again, is not making America great. It's making America very disgusting and vile.
Yeah, because I did a little bit of my own digging, and I thought this was hilarious. Okay, so despite the stereotype of the United States public assistance programs predominantly going towards quote unquote illegal immigrants and minorities, it seems that the majority of welfare, SNAP, and EBT users are actually older white Americans along the Sun Belt. That would be your retirees in Florida. The one,
exactly.
Yeah. So the one place that Donald Trump has not upset people, his old white base, he is literally going after their one source of staying alive. Because, once again, if you look at the numbers, overwhelmingly, those are the people that use the services he's about to cancel. And with 3.5 million supposedly being wiped off the welfare debt table, You would be very surprised to find out, and I was too, a majority of them are older white Americans.
You know what? There has to be a clarion call somewhere. Somewhere in the human brain to kick in, hey, wait a minute. This is not the president I voted for. Case in point, you go online and check it out for yourself. You've seen workers who work for various companies, say a car company, and the car company was shipped overseas to Japan or somewhere else, and those jobs, benefits, securities are now gone. And these people voted for Trump. And now it's an awakening moment. Now it's a clarion call to say that the president did not care about us. He came to our country. I mean, he came to our town, told us to keep the country, you know, keep the country afloat. We're going to keep the economy a steady line. We're going to keep the jobs here. And what happened? These jobs are going overseas. So there has to be a wake-up call for people who did vote for Trump or supported the man. When it happens to you, when something's taken away from you, like your job, like your food stamp, like your benefits, you have to understand, okay, it wasn't the past administration. You can't blame Obama anymore. You got to blame the current administration, the presidency with Donald Trump.
Now, with the health care debate, basically, once again, not really finding foot with Donald Trump at the beginning. Remember, everybody's like, get rid of Obamacare. And then he started trying to do it. And they're like, what's wrong with my health care? I've got the Affordable Care Act. I don't have Obamacare. Oh, they're the same thing.
Yeah.
So with the confusion over the older white population of America and their health care, how likely are they to Pee Wee Herman and da-da-da-da-da connect the dots with their food stamps disappearing and the president trying to take some racist actions that backfire?
Well, it's kind of like a pick your poison. You know, you may be for one, not be for the other, even though it's across the board, the exact same thing to show eradication of programs needed by people, by the American public. Once again, 3.1 million people need these type of services. And again, not looking at the one who's doing it. And so, again, I think when it affects you personally, but because before you point your fingers like, it's happening to them and nothing to do with me. And then when you're like, hey, wait a minute, it's me too. I won't give you more food stamps, more benefits. Also, with certain families and people, you only get the food stamps. Your average per month base money would probably be like $121 a month, for example, along with the food. So all that would be either cut altogether or gone. Then what are you going to do?
Well, my guess is vote Democrat if you're an older white person living in Florida who's about to lose all your benefits.
Yeah.
Just saying. But this is the thing. Mm-hmm. Trump consistently seems to go after what I would like to say are easy, stereotypical, racist hurt points for older white Americans. Anything that keeps some old lady in Des Moines up at night wondering about Al-Qaeda or taking her kitty or something, whatever keeps that scared old white population under the covers and tinfoils over their head, that seems to be the stuff that Donald Trump goes to. But as he's went further and further into areas that he thinks are actually attacking the enemies of those people, the more he seems to attack his own base. The problem is, nobody in his base is realizing it. Chris, I'm going to ask you, with all this stuff that we know that Donald Trump does, specifically the stuff that he does along racist lines, like, you know, thinks that canceling food stamps is going to hurt the minority population and the Democrats. With all of this stuff, what action would actually have to happen? What would Donald Trump actually have to take away from his base before they're like, hey, wait a minute.
It's a very loaded question. I'll answer the best way I know how. I think at some point it really doesn't matter. I think that, for example, this should be, again, a wake-up call, but I don't know how much more you're going to do. You're taking away food. You're taking away money per month. Now, you need food to survive, to live, and to eat. So I don't know. Maybe taking away homes. If you're a person that lives in a single, you know, room, I'll be occupied. SRO, maybe have your homes taken away. Mm-hmm. People have different situations where they're able to get through having an apartment or house via the government, Section 8, or anything like that. So I think maybe, I don't know, if your home is taken away, maybe you'll get it. I really don't know. I think with certain people, can be led blindly. So regardless of the fact of Trump dismantling what you need, you may sit back and say, well, he's still a good president. I don't know how that works out. How can you still say somebody is good when he's doing bad things to you? I don't get that. That's a whole segment for Dr. Phil, whatever, you know, psychological-wise. But still, it seems to me that somebody I voted for that's supposed to take care of me, that I agree with on his principles and everything else to make this country, quote-unquote, great again, and is not being great towards me, my benefits are being taken away from me, then I have to change my thought process. I would. I think most people would, but there are people who say, yeah, go on and take it. You know, go on, and it's going to be okay. No, it's not okay. You have no food, no money, no home. Mm-hmm. So what's it going to take?
Yeah, because I kind of want to give a little wrap-up here about this story that is mind-blowing to me. And let's see if it's mind-blowing to you before we get into one of my favorite stories of the week. Time and time again, Donald Trump seems to only want to go after targets of opportunity as long as they go towards the hateful bent. And this overwhelmingly has meant that his ever-decreasing base is angrier and angrier and angrier individual. We know psychologically that the human mind cannot hold on to anger for too long, or else very, very bad things happen, whether it be physical manifestations of said anger through psychosomatic conditions, or just acting out in violence at the drop of a hat, irritability, and things of that nature. Time and time again, Donald Trump has doubled down on going for the anger, of going for the gut punch type of stuff. But as we have progressed through the first 2 years of his presidency, each one of those punches has lost its oomph. Chris, has America developed too tough of a midsection for stories like this to really kind of galvanize us anymore and think, oh, well, I guess it's a good thing that he's trying to save the country money versus, oh, I guess he's trying to do some racist crap again.
Again, that goes back to how people are fed up and how people are tired. You know, we won't see really any type of results until we see the election in 2020. My guess going into the election of 2020 is the following. The more he continues his vile rhetoric behavior, it has to galvanize with people who do not subscribe to that. Not just like you. You know people who are conservative that don't really subscribe to that. But again, they're quiet because there's too much power at stake. They don't want to go against the throne. And if you're not careful, if you go against Trump, you may out yourself. You may have done some dirty backcourt, you know, deals behind the scenes that may come forward if you go against the throne. So outing Trump, because some of these politicians, I'm going to out myself too, so I'm going to be quiet. So it goes back to where we are in this country right now. Do you want change? Do you want to keep on the same old vile rhetoric this president is behaving? Do you want 4 more years of it, or do you want to get him out of office?
You know, here's the thing, because this week has been a display of political power. Everybody has been stressing their political muscles, hoping that that big vein will pop up on their biceps and they can appear, you know, the biggest beefcake on Muscle Beach. However, a very meek gentleman from the name of New Jersey, from a city of New Jersey, with a simple name like John, might be the most powerful politician in the United States this week. Can we talk about, and I have to say that when I saw this picture of former Daily Show host Jon Stewart standing outside of the Senate chambers with a smirk on his face as a tucking tail Mitch McConnell walked into the chambers trying to avoid him in the background. That smirking image essentially was the most powerful man in Washington enjoying his victory. Am I wrong with that assessment?
No, you're absolutely right. Before getting to Jon Stewart, I've always been a fan of Jon Stewart for years. The Daily Show on the Comedy Central has been revolutionary, to say the least. And here's a guy who was able to have some great writers, some great thinkers, as far as I was concerned, to definitely help change the scope of politics. You've seen politicians over the years appear on the show over the years, especially during election time. And, you know, for Jon to accomplish so much on that one program, it solidified him as someone who made you, again, think. It doesn't matter what side you belong, as long as you think.
Well, Jon has thought since September 11th, 2001, that the United States should take care of its first responders. Now, everybody remembers the first day that The Daily Show was back, a very emphatic, crying, sobbing Jon Stewart talked about all of the resilience of the first responders that he saw. And then later, when said first responders started to get medical conditions, Jon Stewart was one of the first television hosts that stepped up and says, "Hey guys, let's actually talk about this." He then followed said group to Washington, D.C. and enacted the first responders fund. And time and time again, every year on the year, every single time it comes up, Jon Stewart, whether or not he was on The Daily Show, kept showing up to Washington to testify for the 9/11 fund. And this week, despite objections by, of all people, Rand Paul, Jon Stewart, in a 97-2 vote, won permanent funding of the 9/11 Responders Fund. Briz, at this point, is there anything that he can't do?
He should be a hero to all. Again, the Victims Compensation Fund was passed by the Senate Tuesday. The health care would go through 2092. And it's just a revolutionary situation to see it happen. When you talk about what he did in front of Congress last June was sheer brilliance. He shamed them into getting this done. Shamed them. He called them out. You don't find too many a politician or anybody, let alone, no offense, an entertainer, talk show host, go in front of Congress and let you know you should be ashamed of yourself by not taking care of the first responders.
Yeah, and everybody should have been ashamed of themselves for that. We are ashamed that this is the end of the show. Till next week, take it easy.